The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So continuing this topic of not self, the last couple weeks began exploring the teaching of the five aggregates, which is kind of a way we could say to break down or to look at the different aspects of our human experience. The five aggregates could be thought of as the different processes that make up our experience, but also as the different experiences that we have, the different components of what the experience is. But just a reminder, the five aggregates are body or form, feeling, whether experience is pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral, perception, the recognizing aspect of experience, mental formations, the kind of the intending, the volitional aspect of experience. This includes emotions, it includes thoughts, it includes views, beliefs, pretty much anything that happens in the mind that has a kind of activity to it. So this includes mindfulness, this includes concentration, this includes equanimity and love and compassion, along with anger and frustration and irritation. So it's a big area of experience. And then consciousness or knowing, just this really simple, bare aspect of experience at a sense door. So our experience, any part of our experience, anything that we experience can be understood to be put together by these processes, and also could be described as being the experience is the kind of the result of these processes. So for example, feeling tone. The feeling tone could be understood as a process, the process of mind, the function of feeling, that part of our system that does the work of feeling. And it also could be understood as the experience of pleasant, the experience of unpleasant, the experience of neither pleasant nor unpleasant. The perception aspect could be understood as that function of our mind that does the work of perceiving, recognizing what's happening. It's this kind of, the process by which we recognize experience. And it can also be understood to be what is recognized. So when we recognize things, objects in the room, for instance, when we recognize a wall or a book or a couch or a cushion, that's also perception. And the teachings describe both sides of it as being the how to understand or explore the aggregates. Last time we talked a little more about mental formations, that whole terrain of emotional activity of intention or volition. The volitional part of that is, and we talked about this last time, so for instance, when something like an emotion arises of some kind, perhaps anger, we can just use anger as an example, that anger arising will tend to it has a kind of a shaping power to it. It shapes our experience. So anger will shape the experience of the body to perhaps have the sense of pressure and heat and tightness and tension. It will shape the feeling tone to have probably an unpleasant quality. It will shape the perception to kind of orient to recognizing or interpreting experience, to perceive it as though perhaps we're being attacked. It tends to shape more anger, and it tends to incline us to become aware of or to receive in consciousness things that kind of confirm that anger. So it kind of shapes the things that we become aware of as well. And so this is a very powerful place where selfing happens. The teaching of the five aggregates is often used to help us understand how a sense of self is created. And tonight we'll look at one of the ways that the teaching on the aggregates is used in that way. So the teachings describe that we tend to identify or create a sense of self around these aggregates. We might tend to, and Bhikkhu Anālayo has a great way to express this. He says that the body, you know, in terms of each of these five aggregates, so the body, the first one, or form, the body tends to be, we identify that with being where I am. So the body is where I am. You know, that's kind of, we locate ourselves there in the body. Feeling, the pleasant, unpleasant, neutral aspect, Bhikkhu Anālayo points to, feelings are how I am. We have the kind of, it's in that terrain of a little bit of, you know, so how am I feeling? Am I feeling pleasant or unpleasant? So that again, the identification is around that I am the one who is feeling these pleasant, unpleasant experiences. Perception is what I am recognizing. So, you know, again, this feels a little bit more like we are just, you know, being impinged on in a way, and we get to perceive things. We perceive things. It's like there is a self that is the recipient of perceiving. That's kind of the way that we experience that at times. And then mental formations, he says, this volitional aspect. Volitional formations are why I am doing what I'm doing. This, again, we, you know, when anger arises, we tend to act from that as a motivator. When love and compassion arises, we tend to act from that as a motivator. And so that's maybe another way to express what the mental formations are. They are the motivating function of the mind. They motivate us to do something. Some of the mental formations are subtle in that way, like mindfulness is a pretty subtle mental formation in that way. What mindfulness does is it's aware of experience, and it tends to encourage the mind to be more aware of experience. So it does kind of shape that. It has that kind of motivation, that as we become aware of experience, there's the motivation to continue being aware of experience. And then we forget, of course. And then he says that consciousness, we could say, is the way I'm experiencing what I'm experiencing. Consciousness is the ground. Consciousness is happening in every single moment, and we need consciousness to have a moment of experience. We identify with consciousness as like, oh yes, I am the one who knows. So these five, we tend to create or have a sense of self in relationship to these five categories of experience. These five that Bhikkhu Anālayo points to are useful for us to just begin to taste or get a sense of how the mind does kind of congeal around each of these five aggregates. I find this teaching to be really useful as a shorthand for helping me recognize, oh yeah, that, you know, I'm identifying with being the one who's feeling this, or I'm identifying with being the one who knows, or I'm identifying with being the angry one, or whatever it is. So, you know, it just kind of helps to see how the identification is happening around these processes. The Buddha used a teaching with the five aggregates. he described the sense of self that arises connected with the five aggregates. And also he described this connected with the six sense spaces. So there's two ways into this, but we're speaking of the aggregates at this point. So with respect to the aggregates, he described the phrase is identity view. Sakaya ditti is the Pali. Identity view, sometimes translated as personality view. Essentially, it is that sense of self. But it is, in this case, it is understood, there's slightly different flavors of senses of self, which we might get to a little bit later today. And if we don't, we'll get to it next time. This flavor is a kind of a belief or a view. There's also perhaps the sense, just the kind of very, just the gut feeling of, how can it not, there not be a sense of, you know, how can there not be a me here? But there are some pretty clear times that like, that the sense of self is being shaped as a perspective or a view. Like, you know, in my own experience, I have a lot of history with aversive kinds of mind states and negativity, self-negativity, and those kinds of identifications. You know, I'm the one. You know, I'm miserable all the time. I'm miserable. I mean, and that mind state of miserableness being identified with was kind of a belief of you. That I am always miserable. So the way this played out, I think I've described this recently, but I'll just use it again here because it's a good example of this. When I noticed that, you know, I wasn't so miserable, you know, what my mind might do with that is, I'm happy now, but I know what I really am is miserable. That's a view. That's a belief that is kind of overlaid on experience. You know, that, you know, here's my experience now. I'm feeling pretty good, but I know what I really am is miserable. It's just an idea or a belief that is kind of really held to. And so the Buddha pointed to this level of selfing, this identity view, the belief of a, you know, this is who I am. Not just the feeling of the I am-ness, but the belief, this is who I am. The Buddha highlighted this as a particular useful exploration. It's kind of like the largest or the most outer levels of identification that happen, this identity view. And he talked about different ways that this identity view comes up with respect to these aggregates. So this is a kind of a complex teaching, and I'm going to try to simplify it a little bit. He basically says that there's four ways that we can identify with any of the five aggregates. And so there's four ways that we might identify with the body or form. I'll read this section of the suttas. This is in Majjhima 109, if you are interested in references, Majjhima 109, and this is paragraphs 10 and 11. How does the identity view come into being? The Buddha is asked, how does identity view come into being? There is the case where a run-of-the-mill person who is untrained, basically, assumes form to be the self. That's one. Assumes form to be the self, or the self as possessing form, or the self, or the form as in the self, or the self as in form. So we have, with each of these five aggregates, I am this thing. I am X. I am this body. X is mine. This, the body is mine. These, the, with the body, some of these are, can be very kind of, we can kind of grok or get, you know, what this means. Like the, we may not always feel like I am the body, but there are times when, you know, if there's a particularly difficult or painful experience, we may have that sense, I am the body. You know, it just feels like the body is the entirety of experience. So the, that, so that's one, I am the body. The body is mine. That's a pretty familiar one to me. The body is mine. It belongs to me. I am inside the body. That one's also pretty familiar. You know, I'm inside here. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, the fourth one for me is, doesn't make so much sense, but, you know, maybe sometimes the body is inside of me. Maybe that one's not such a one that we would feel so much. The body is in me. You know, maybe, that's not one I've particularly experienced. But I think there might be particular states of concentration or something where the sense of the I, you know, the sense of the consciousness becomes so large if you're identified with that kind of really big, vast experience. It might feel like this small form is in that experience. You know, I can imagine something like that. It's not a very familiar experience to me, but I don't think we have to actually, you know, find or recognize every single one of these 20 ways. So some of the other aggregates, I think, do work for some of these other ones. So let's look at feeling, you know, the feeling tone, for instance. So I am the feeling. Maybe at times, you know, when a feeling is particularly strong, it's like, yeah, that's like the miserableness. Well, that's a mental formation for me. You know, that was that miserable quality, that's a mental formation. And there was definitely this complete identification. I am the miserable one. And so that was a kind of identification. I can imagine that happening with feeling tone as well. The feeling is mine. That one I recognize, you know, and likewise with the other ones as well. You know, perception is mine. You know, so it's my mind doing this. You know, and the mental formations. This anger is mine. Yep, that one I recognize. And so that's the second one again. And then I am inside of X. Now that one makes a lot of sense for body, but I am inside of feeling, that one is less familiar to me. Maybe it's kind of resonates for some of you, but I'm inside of feeling. I am inside of a mental formation. I'm inside of anger. That might resonate. You know, it's like when the anger just explodes, it's like, I feel like this tiny little thing that's just surrounded by that anger. So that makes sense to me. So I am inside a feeling is a little less, but the feeling is inside of me. Yes, that makes sense. Body's inside of me doesn't make so much sense. Feelings inside of me, yeah. Perceptions inside of me, yeah. That I kind of have a sense of a kind of an identification, you know, at a very subtle level. Yeah, you know, it feels like, well, where else is it happening but inside of me? So these four ways are kind of applied to the various aggregates to begin to explore the ways that we have an identity. But what I would say is perhaps it what makes the most sense in terms of an exploration like this, and it can be useful to do this as a reflective practice. I wouldn't do this so much at first as a reflective practice. It can become, I think, more natural as a just receiving and knowing experience over time. But initially with a teaching like that, I think what might be useful is if you see a particularly strong identification, you see a particularly clear sense of, yep, that feels like me. You might explore, does it feel like, you know, you're completely equated with that? Does it feel like that thing is inside of you? Does it feel like you're inside of that thing? Or does it feel like it's yours? So those four things, the equating of I am X, X is mine, I am in X, or X is in me. You might just have a sense with particular strong identifications of whether what flavor of this this kind of identity view is happening. And the recognition that it is a view. It's important actually to recognize that it's a view. There's an important piece about it being a view, because as we explored last time, views are mental formations, and mental formations shape our experience. So the sense of self arising as a view, so that belief, I'm the miserable one, that shaped my experience. Believing I was a miserable person meant that I was a miserable person. So this is an important understanding around the teaching of not self. I mean, because it seems like, you know, with the teaching of self, the teaching of not self, basically, it's like, well, there isn't a self really. It's just it's a belief, basically. The Buddha describes this in this way, that it's a belief. It's an idea. It's a view in the mind. It's not a thing. It's like a view of, you know, what I'm capable of, or, you know, who somebody is or something. It's like that can come and go. It's just something that's created by the mind, these views, these beliefs. But that the not self nature of views and beliefs simply means that they're not stable, solid, lasting, simply means that they are not a thing that can be like pointed to and said, yep, there it is. It's going to be there. Maybe, you know, I think sometimes it might feel like it's there for a little while and then falls apart. But any form of something feeling like it's there, that's a mistaken understanding of the sense of self. You know, that we attribute it as having some kind of a there-ness to it. It's just a process. And yet it just being a process doesn't mean that it doesn't have an effect on us. Mental formations have a very strong effect on us, as we talked about last time, you know, the shaping nature of something like anger or frustration or love or compassion. Those things shape experience, whether we identify with them or not. The sense of self, when we pick something up to say, that's me, you know, that view then becomes a mental formation that shapes experience. And so it has an effect, you know, it's like the sense of self is not a nothing, because the belief in the sense of self has profound effects on our own experience and on what happens in the world, the choices that we make. And so it's worth respecting. It's worth respecting that sense of self and getting curious about it and beginning to see if we can kind of unpack it and explore it a little bit. So I think I'll stop there and see if there's any comments or questions or reflections, and pick up the last piece of what I was going to say next time. Oh, wait, let me set you up to unmute yourselves. Okay, you should be able to unmute yourselves now. Okay, Ali.
Ali Andre, thank you. So when you were talking, the sense of, I was noticing that I have a self-critic, which is like the mental formation that arises in me. But in most of the time, it's unconscious and it's just so huge that I cannot see it. And it kind of like runs my life and, you know, tells me what I need to do or what not to do or what not. But the awareness, most of the time, it's not big enough to contain that. But at times, if
you
I'm
mean
lucky,
that
I'm,
it doesn't recognize it,
right,
that it's happening?
Right, okay. Yeah. Exactly.
You kind of, you'd see it after the fact or something?
Sometimes when I'm lucky, I'll see it after the fact. It's that again. And once I see it, it kind of like eases up. And so I can see it's not a solid thing in there that operates. It's a self view. It's mostly unconscious. I mean, it's when it comes to consciousness, I can see it. But mostly it's like operating under the radar. And it's like huge. And it's like 90% of the time. And I mean, lucky if it's 10%, I can see it. Then I can see it softening up.
You know, sometimes the strongest identities that we have are the hardest to see in a way, because they're so conditioned. And that assumption, it is a view, as you've seen. When you see it, you can see that it's a view. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's just so deeply conditioned that, you know, that's part of the power of those senses of self, you know, that they just shape our choices, they shape our actions, they shape our decisions, they shape what we say, especially when we're not mindful. And so, you know, that this is why the teaching of mindfulness is so important. And yet you've seen it. You've seen a little crack there. Mm-hmm. You know, you've seen a little crack. You know a little bit of what that experience of that judgment is, you know, that experience of that judger that's kind of in there. So you know a little bit of that. And so that awareness does begin to develop over time. You know, when you're caught in it, there's not a lot you can do about it. And yet, you know, you can do a couple things. So, you know, something you could do is reflect back on your day, you know, have a practice at a particular time. If there's a particular identity that you're interested in exploring. So for myself, anger was an identity I was interested in exploring. It was the very first practice that I used. And just kind of like I set myself a kind of intention. I'm going to see if I can know when I'm angry. And, you know, I sometimes would notice, sometimes I wouldn't. But that intention did help the mind to be able to see that pattern. And then you could, at the end of a day, kind of reflect back, you know, did that judger come up today? Let me just think through, and not with judging yourself about it, but just kind of as a, and I'm like, okay, maybe this will help me to be able to see the judger if I can recognize retrospectively when it came up. And so you could just like, if it's a pattern you're particularly interested in exploring, you know, okay, at the end of the day, did the judger come up today? Oh yeah, it came up there when I was in the grocery store and I looked at that person and thought that thing. Yep, there it was. I didn't notice it at the time. And to just see if there cannot be judging around that, but to just let it be something that might support you to, because when we see something in retrospect like that, you know, it's like, oh yeah, when I was in the grocery store and I just saw what that person was doing, I was judging them and I didn't notice it. In retrospect, as we can notice that, so this is a reflective practice, then it might help us to notice when that kind of pattern might come up in the future, closer to the experience, you know, more in real time. So those are a few things you can explore with those really deep, you know, those deep patterns. We have a lot of them. Yeah.
But the sense of unconsciousness, that it's not any of those aggregates that they meant. I'm sure it's in the mental formation. That's like, that goes in
judgment
there.
Is a mental formation, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It goes in there and it just like, it's under the radar with 90% of the time for most people.
Yeah, and it does tend to shape, like you see. So this is how you can tell a mental formation. It tends to shape how you do things, what you do, how you respond, how you react, how you feel, all of those. It shapes all of the other aggregates.
Both internally and externally to the others.
Yeah, indeed.
You project it outwards. You project it outwards to the others as this having the same thing.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Thank you.